Hi, I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the show that explores big questions through intimate stories in the great outdoors. About 5 years ago, I moved to Wyoming. For those of you who've never been here, it's one of those square states out west. And it's beautiful. Vast open prairies, tall jagged mountains, and lots of wildlife. And one of the things I noticed right away was that a lot of people out here hunt. Each year when hunting season starts, they'll go out into the woods and spend days on end trying to shoot deer and elk and other big game. Now, I'm originally from New York City, and so the idea of hunting was pretty foreign to me. None of my friends were hunters, and I have to admit I had a pretty negative opinion of the whole thing. Going out and killing animals seemed, frankly, kind of barbaric. But out west, everyone was doing it. PhD scholars, small business owners, elementary school teachers. It wasn't just some redneck pastime. And, as I would come to appreciate, it wasn't really all that barbaric. It helps keep wildlife populations sustainable and supplies families with non-factory farmed meat. And yet, even though I've come to appreciate hunting, I've never tried it myself. I like to joke that if I had a choice between hunting and being a vegetarian, I would almost certainly be a vegetarian. I somehow don't think I have it in me to willingly kill an animal. So why is that? Are some of us just not cut out to be hunters? Or is there more to the equation? Today's story comes from Brooklyn-based reporter Sam Anderson, who wanted to answer that very question. Did he have it in him to be a hunter? And if so, would taking the life of an animal fundamentally change who he was? I'll let Sam take it from here.
Is it loaded right now?
It's not officially loaded until you have this in, because this is what's going to create the spark that's going to fire the charge. So now it's loaded, because we're going in.
Ever since my dad started hunting, he's been trying to bring me with him. I've never felt the desire to kill an animal, but since I was a little kid, I was fascinated with guns and knives and other tools of violence. Typical boy stuff. Deep down, I think I always wondered what it would be like to take the life of another creature. And I was curious about this ancient ritual, this masculine tradition, where you go into the woods, just you and your dad, to go hunting, and you come out changed, somehow. Maybe more grown up. We don't come from a hunting family, and though I was curious about this experience, I wasn't so curious that I tried to seek it out. My dad started hunting right around the same time I moved to New York City. And at that point in my life, spending a weekend in the woods with my old man was the last thing I wanted to do. A few years went by, and I became more involved in my new life and less involved in his. But then, something happened. Right at the start of hunting season, my dad got a DUI, and he lost his license. My mom was pissed. Now she had to drive him to work every day, and there was no way she was going to waste a Saturday bringing him into the woods to hunt. So he came to me, his oldest son. He asked if I would go with him. And I said yes. So we loaded up his truck, and we headed out to the woods.
Warren County, New Jersey, to go hunting. January what?
2016.
Warm winter day. Sunny.
That's my dad. He's 48 years old and known for taking long pauses in his speech. He loves nature, and he's inspired that love in me too. I think that's partly why I found myself driving him into the woods that day. It sounds cliche, but I wanted to make him proud. I wanted to share this experience, to let him teach me something new the way he did it when I was younger, like how to pitch a baseball or jumpstart a car. I knew that spending a day in the woods going hunting would mean a lot to him, and it meant something to me too. So, there I was, in the car with my dad, and a gun in the trunk. And it was becoming increasingly clear that I was supposed to be the one to shoot it.
So what we're gonna do today is you're gonna shoot the first shot. and then you're going to quickly hand me the rifle, and I want to reload it, and if there's a second shot to be had, I'm going to take it.
The first shot. He wanted me to take the first shot. As soon as he said it, I started to get nervous. What if I can't do it, I thought. What if I can't pull the trigger? Will he think it's because I'm weak, or that I don't care about him and his new favorite sport? And what about the alternative? What if I can pull the trigger? What if I am capable of killing? Sure, I used to think weapons were cool, but I've actually lived my life as a pretty peaceful person. I've never hurt anything. And I was going to start now? What does it say about my character that I'm willing to commit an act of violence just to please another person? My dad came to terms with the idea of hunting a while ago, and he says there's actually a pretty strong argument to be made in favor of killing deer.
That's why it's unlimited bag on does. They want you to get as many does as possible in the state.
Because there's too many deer, right?
There's too many deer.
Now, you might not picture New Jersey as a wilderness teeming with wildlife, but we actually have 250,000 acres of rural public land, especially along the western side bordering Pennsylvania, which is where my dad and I were headed. And if you live out here, you know that the deer population is out of control. Drive down any highway, and you'll be sure to pass at least 2 or 3 deer carcasses on the side of the road. This overpopulation isn't just a hazard for drivers, it's bad for the deer. There are more of them than the ecosystem can properly support. So the Division of Fish and Wildlife made a rule where you can shoot 2 deer every day for as long as the season lasts.
There was one guy, the butcher, told me who had 98 deer himself.
In one season?
In one season. That sounds absurd. Well, what do you do with all that meat? I'm sure he's not doing anything with it.
Hunters are definitely taking advantage of this rule. In Colorado, hunters killed about 34,000 deer last year. In New Jersey, a state that's 10 times smaller, they killed over 52,000. So yeah, we have a deer problem. And from that point of view, hunting makes sense. It serves a logical purpose, and knowing this made me feel better about the whole situation. But even though I could rationalize the logical side of it, there was still the moral side, the ethical side. I imagined a young doe with big brown eyes frolicking through the forest, with a fawn following behind her. And lurking in the bushes was me, the hunter, the enemy of everything cute and furry. When I thought of myself as the hunter pointing a gun at that innocent creature, I felt cruel and barbaric. I didn't want to be that person. We parked the truck on a gravelly road in a rural town called Alamuchi and hiked into the woods. Eventually, we came to a spot on a hillside overlooking a small valley. My dad said every morning, the herd of deer come in from the deep woods towards the houses to look for food, and each night, they return along a similar path. He was confident that the herd would pass through this valley sometime today. Our spot wasn't concealed at all, which I found surprising. As it turns out, if you're completely silent and still, the deer will look straight at you without noticing a thing. But they do have an amazing sense of smell. Luckily, my dad was prepared.
So what are you doing here?
Spraying fox piss on this wick.
Oh, it smells like...
What's it smell like?
It smells like shit.
It's not that bad.
It's pretty bad.
I think it's pretty cool. You get used to it, I guess. So that's gonna just kind of be a scent that's all around here at the moment. Intended to cover our stinky scent. Your perfumes and deodorants.
Shampoos.
That's it.
With our scents camouflaged, we rolled out a blanket, sat down, and loaded the gun. We were using a muzzle-loading rifle, basically an updated version of the muskets used in the Revolutionary War, meaning you only get one shot.
You gotta be good. A little more challenging. Not so easy. If you're gonna take a deer's life, you gotta put some effort into it, make it more work. I don't know, I just justify it to myself better that way. So they're gonna come in somewhere through here, and they're gonna make their way in here eventually. But the risk is, you gotta be able to get into a shooting position and get a clean shot without them seeing you. If in the process they see you and you spook them enough, they're gonna run off. You want to be able to squeeze your shot off when you know you have a good one as soon as possible, but don't want to rush it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He explained that you aim for the kill zone, the lower part of the chest that contains the heart and lungs. If I miss, if I hit the gut or the hip or the shoulder, the animal will suffer a long and painful death. My dad told me it's my responsibility to prevent this. One time, he shot a deer in the lung, but it wasn't a kill shot. The deer used its other lung to run deeper into the woods. My dad followed the trail of blood for an hour before he finally found it, and he had to gut it in the dark. I could tell that he felt bad about this.
But it is exciting, actually. When you see it for the first time, see a deer for the first time, you know, for that day, it's exciting, because then you know you're going to have a shot. The gun's yours.
We sat in silence and let the woods quiet down around us. I always thought of hunting as this very intense, action-packed sport, but it turns out that 90% of your day is spent sitting in one place, being totally silent. And during that time, your mind begins to wander. I started thinking about my dad and how he felt the need to justify his actions, how he brought up the overpopulation of deer, or the idea that using a simpler gun made it more fair to the animal. He too felt bad about what he was doing. It occurred to me that maybe most hunters have experienced the same moral dilemma. Maybe they hesitate or even agonize over the decision to pull the trigger. But eventually, they do it. That's what makes them hunters. And I wondered, am I one of them? The question filled my stomach with tension. We continued to wait. As the minutes went by, the air around us grew colder. The sky grew darker. I wrapped a blanket around my legs for warmth, but my toes were numb. We hadn't moved our bodies in nearly 3 hours. And as the sun began to set behind the hills, I felt a sense of relief. I knew that once it got dark, it was time to go home, and I wouldn't be expected to kill a deer after all. But then, in the distance, I saw something move. It was a deer. And then another. The whole herd ambled into view, 5 or 6 of them in total. They were slowly creeping towards us. I was going to have a shot. They were inching closer to our hiding spot, sniffing the ground for food and raising their heads every few seconds, looking for danger. They came closer and closer, and then the biggest doe lifted her head and looked directly at me. Her eyes were big and brown and alert, and I couldn't shake the sense that she was aware of my presence. Without thinking, my body moved into the shooting position. Her ears pricked up as if she heard me pulling back the hammer of the gun. And in that moment, all of my human emotions disappeared. All of the fear, all of the guilt, all of the contradicting feelings that had paralyzed me with anxiety were gone. And in their place was raw sensory perception. It was like I could see and hear for miles. I had disappeared into a new reality where mind and body were one. And all of my senses were concentrated on the doe. I was completely focused. Peering through the scope, I watched the crosshairs float across her soft golden fur. I took a deep breath.
Just watch them.
The clearing filled with smoke and deer sprinted away in all directions. I expected the doe to drop dead where she was standing, but when the smoke cleared, there was nothing there. We scrambled down the hillside. We approached the spot where the deer should have been.
See anything?
There was nothing. The clearing was empty.
We just gotta keep looking around in this area. There's some blood. We'll never find it, then we missed.
We scanned the leaves for drops of blood. Even if I hit the doe, it could have kept running, so we continued to search.
What? Wait, you found the trail? Did you find it? No, I didn't see any blood. Where is it?
Right there.
Oh, shit.
There was the doe, sprawled out on her side, her legs pointing out stiffly. Her tongue was hanging out of her blood-covered mouth. There was no question. This animal was dead. I knelt down next to the doe and put my hand on her belly.
That's weird. It's really weird.
It's a warm still, right?
Yeah, it's really warm.
Feel the body.
Big ears.
Giant ears.
And eyelashes, too, just like the cartoons. And their feet.
Aren't they cool, the feet?
And their hooves are soft. They have pads on the bottom.
Yeah, and they're like soft, flexible toes. They're not like a hard hoof like a horse.
Yeah.
Beautiful beast.
Hey. Truly.
But that's a good shot. We didn't travel very far.
All right.
Good job, though. You got them. We got them. That means we're going to go dump this one off at the butcher and pick up the last week's, bring it home.
Yeah.
And we're a success. We got 3 for the season so far. Congratulations. What do you think?
Well, not so sure right now. Not quite so sure what I think about this.
In that moment, kneeling over the body of the lifeless doe, I felt different. Something had changed. Moments ago, I was watching this creature, and it was watching me. There were 2 of us, 2 creatures in the woods, coexisting. And then, I pulled the trigger. And suddenly, 1 less life in the world. And yet, touching the body that I consciously destroyed, I didn't feel sad. I felt a feeling of power. It wasn't a good feeling, but it wasn't exactly bad either. It was a sensation of total control over my environment. I felt like an athlete after winning a race, when that natural high fills your body with warmth and confidence, and the feeling that nothing is beyond your reach. By that time, the sun had gone down, and we still had to gut the animal. We put on our headlamps. That's when I realized the ordeal was far from over.
Oh, here. There's your shot. Right there.
So you were a little high.
A little bit from high. The looks of it from outside. But let's see. We'll know for sure once we get inside and we'll see the organs. Where you got
it. I don't think I want to get inside and see the organs.
This is the part. You might, you know, this is what you got to do, though. You just did the fun part. Now the work starts.
He pulled out 2 knives, a small folding one and a big hunting knife.
So the first thing you do is you cut a hole around its anus.
Even that.
Wow, really?
Yep.
That's how you do it.
So what you gotta do is you cut around the ass. And then when you gut it, you're pulling everything out, so you're gonna pull that right out from the front. No, this is difficult. That was the hardest part, really.
Oh, it's fucking disgusting.
Yeah. It's gonna be.
That's really horrible.
And when you get down to the red, that's the muscle.
Yeah. Wow. The skin is really just like, it just peels off like a layer. Just like a, you, like the muscle looks just like you think a muscle would look.
Oh yeah, just like a human.
Using the smaller knife, my dad made 1 long incision along the belly of the animal, exposing its organs.
All right, so take a look. Trachea. It's like a corrugated tube.
Oh wow.
See See it?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna cut this. This is the artery or vein. This is a blood vessel. When I cut that, some blood's gonna spurt out. But you cut that, the trachea, and I guess the esophagus is right with it. And you just pull it all out, and it just kind of rip it from the back.
And everything comes with it?
Yeah, until you get down here. Then you gotta mess around with the ass again. But this is going smooth. So let me cut this. Just cut right through it. That was some food he just ate.
Oh, wow, look at that.
And then you stick your finger in there.
Oh, wow. Oh, oh Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, this is where you made a mess of the thing with your shot.
My dad tipped the deer on its side, and all of the guts just kind of flopped out onto the ground.
Let me just flop him over, her over. Make sure I got everything.
And that's when it really hit me. Seeing the insides of this creature in a pile on the forest floor, with steam and the putrid smell of rotting meat rising into the air, was truly revolting. I already knew that I was responsible for the fate of this doe, but I realized that pulling the trigger is the easy part. Hunters have a euphemism for the gutting process. They call it field dressing. But what it really is just stabbing and cutting a warm body with a knife. The reality is intimate and brutal and totally animalistic. There's no other way to describe it. And yet, I couldn't look away.
This is dirty work.
Yeah, dirty work, but you do it quick as possible, and you're done with it.
What do we do with all these organs that are just...
That's the best part.
What?
This here?
Yeah.
Come back tomorrow morning, or tomorrow, completely gone, no signs of it. All this blood's gonna be licked up and eaten.
By who?
By the woods.
By the woods, he mostly means coyotes, turkey vultures, and black bears.
All right, let's take a look at what you did.
The final step was to open up the chest cavity and remove the heart and lungs.
So this is all torn up lungs.
Oh, wow.
Tore through here, this is the heart.
What should we do with the heart? Should we eat it?
No, I don't usually eat the heart, but I do.
I was kidding, I was not going to eat that heart.
I do tend to like to hold it and see it and... feel it as a matter of ritual, I guess.
My dad held the heart in his hand. It was big, about the size of a grapefruit. He gestured for me to take it into my hand, but I couldn't. I accepted the fact that I was responsible for killing this doe, but I wasn't ready to embrace it as a victory like he was. It was just too much. My dad put down the heart, and we tied a rope around the doe's legs and started dragging the carcass back towards the road.
That's it. Yeah. And it's a matter of getting it out of the woods into your truck.
When we dropped the doe off at the butcher, my dad proudly told the man that it was my first kill. He even sent a picture to the rest of the family. I had set out to make him proud, and I achieved that goal. So what about me? I had gone into this thinking I might secretly be disgusted with myself if I actually killed an animal. But as it turns out, I was pretty proud of myself too. Successfully shooting a deer made me feel strong and powerful and self-reliant in a way that I had never felt before. It's been about a year since I had that experience, and looking back now, I realize that hunting does change your perspective. It forces you to realize just how difficult it was for our ancestors to obtain food for their families. It made me appreciate both the physical skill and the emotional intensity of the sport. And it helped me to accept the fact that hunting is not just a hobby. For many people in the world, it's a way of life. But those realizations are all kind of academic. On a more personal level, I've realized that hunting does not actually change who you are. I'm not a different person just because I took the life of another animal. When it came down to it, pulling the trigger wasn't that hard. In fact, it was almost innate. So maybe I was always capable of violence. I just hadn't acted on it until now. Maybe we're all capable of violence. Even the most peace-loving among us.
The That story was brought to us by Sam Anderson, a freelance journalist based in Brooklyn. He also contributes to WNYC, the NPR station in New York City. Special thanks to Zach Mack, who helped produce an earlier version of the story. To hear more of Sam's work, you can check out his website at samanderson.nyc. Special thanks to several listeners who made financial contributions to Out There: Sarah McCluskey, Billy Callis, Nanette Nelson, Liz Nesbitt, Anna Tengen, Carrie Smith, and Deb and Vince Garcia all made gifts to the show. Another thank you goes to Dewey Gallegos for his donation. Dewey owns a bike shop in Laramie, Wyoming, and we actually had a story about him and his wife Jessica on one of the first episodes of Out There. It's a story about what happens when the person you love doesn't love what you do. In case you missed that episode, here's a little taste.
When I saw what Jessica did, like when she showed me a video of what rafting was the very first time when she was getting ready to go to the Grand Canyon, I just remember thinking she was insane, like completely and utterly insane. And I remember the first time she invited me to go rafting with her, I was like, yeah, that'd be great. You know, just like trying to keep it together. But I was afraid. I was really afraid of what she did.
If you missed that story, go back and give it a listen. It's called Pedaling and Paddling, and it aired in the spring of 2015. If you're enjoying Out There and you'd like to do your part to support the show, you can make a financial contribution at outthereshow.com. Podcasts like this are only possible with the support of listeners. And especially now that we're doing the show twice a month, every dollar counts. If you'd like an Out There t-shirt, we'd be happy to send you one as a thank you gift for a donation of $50 or more. That's it for this episode. Our theme music was written by Jared Arnold, and our website is outthereshow.com. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.